Welcome to North Street Community Church Podcast. This is Ben Hess.
I'm Keegan Wright.
And we're here doing another podcast. We got some positive feedback from the last one. I hope you guys enjoy this. This is just a way for us to be connecting during this time of social distancing. And maybe this is something we'll continue doing. I think we might. We've been looking forward to doing this with different people. Just so you know, in case you're just listening on the computer, if you have an iPhone, you can listen on the podcast app. Just look up North Street. That's it. Just North Street. You look for our icon. It's a white background. It has our church symbol on there, and it says North Street Community Church. And you can subscribe to all the podcasts. And we have sermons up on there. Some sermons, and as well as these podcasts. So make sure to do that if you would like to do that on your phone. Okay, so today we have Abby Martin with us, and she's been around here for a while, I would say, and I've known her most of her life in some form or fashion. And so I'm just happy to have her here, and we can do our interview. So welcome, Abby, to the North Street Podcast.
Well, thank you.
So first off, I just want to ask, who are you? Like, where are you from? Have you always grown up here in Canton? Or, tell us a little bit about where you're from and who you are.
Yeah, I was born in Williamsport. Grew up in Canton. We did move from a house near Jay Goods when I was like little. That's where
my family lives. Yes. Now. I have some family that lives in that house now. My brother actually lives there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So other than there, I've lived in the same house my whole life. Just like 2 miles away from here. Lots of stability that way growing up. I went to the Canton Mennonite Church,
yep.
As long as I can remember, and then I've been here since we've been here.
Yeah, so just so people know, Canton Mennonite Church, we didn't talk about this last time at all, Canton Mennonite Church became North Street Community Church, so when we refer to Canton Mennonite, we're just talking about North Street, really, yep. in a lot of that sense. So you grew up from around here, so tell me, like, when you were a child, what was your childhood look like? Were you raised in a Christian home? Were you, where'd you go to school? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I was raised in a Christian home. That was definitely something central to my upbringing. I can remember us doing like family devotions in the evenings. And that's something that... I mean, we haven't always stuck with, but it's something that's like definitely central to learning about God. And then Sunday school, church. I remember Sally Rowe, Leona Grayville is my first Sunday school teachers.
Did they have candy back then? Because today my children are like obsessed with candy in church.
Well, we got to choose either M&M's or Skittles, and you got as many as your age. So I remember like selecting 8 of my favorite colors, and it's like a big decision. Like, are we going fruity or are we going chocolatey? Like, it was a big deal. That was Leona, I remember.
That's great. So. How early, like, did you have a salvation experience, like, when you were younger, or how did that work for you? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't even know exactly when, because it was I think I was very young, but I remember the location. It was in our living room. We were, like, all laying on the floor, doing, like, our family devotions, and I was laying next to my dad, and I remember we would all take turns praying out loud, and I use the phrase, like, asking Jesus into my heart. Mm. And I remember at the time, it was something I wanted to do, but I wanted to make my parents proud, for sure. Like, yeah. I knew, like, this will make them very happy. So I was probably, like, 4 or 5. And then from there, like, through different events, camps, and things, like, you kind of, like, read, dedicate your life when you get older and understand more. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my experience. Like, as I grew in understanding, I could, like, just further my relationship with the Lord.
Yeah. Cool. I was curious about that because, I think about my experience. I was pretty young. And then I think about, my own children. And, for whatever reason, I have, this calm assurance about them. They've described different things. They haven't, responded to, an altar call, per se. But yet, the way they talk about their life and Jesus and, how they talk about doing wrong things and wanting to do the right things and just some of those things, I just have this, calm assurance. I don't know how you feel about that, Deegan. Yeah. I mean, you have children.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
Titus is definitely still a sinner. Nadia, she prays for her baby sister all the time. So, she definitely has that. She knows to talk to Jesus. We read the Jesus Storybook Bible to her all the time. And
yeah, that's a great one.
She loves Jesus. And I'm not 100% sure on her full understanding yet, but she definitely knows when she's in trouble. Prays to him she talks to him a lot, so which is cool.
Because I sometimes wonder if the line is a little blurry sometimes as a child who is raised in a Christian home, and they start to have that understanding and they're doing their own prayers. And I just wonder about that. I think we all have our salvation experience of some form or fashion. I don't want to deny that, but at the same time I can't help but wonder about some of those different things in our lives. It's just really cool to think about when you're, for us who have been raised somewhat in Christian atmospheres and that kind of thing.
It's interesting because I don't remember my life before Jesus. I don't have necessarily that piece in my testimony. It just always was. Mm-hmm. That is my testimony. I can't imagine my life without Jesus because my life was not without him. So it's kind of interesting. Kids that are raised in Christian homes, it always was.
That's so true, because then and at the same time, I'm sure you're familiar with situations in your life where you're I strayed away, or I did not do the right thing, and I willingly went against what I knew was right, or what was best as a child, or even as an adult. All struggle at times with different things, and so it's maybe it's not before we had a salvation experience, or before we had that assurance of, or something. But at the same time, understanding what it's like maybe to go against or rebel a little bit and those types of things. It's just interesting. We all have such unique experiences in our relationship with God and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting. Okay, so a salvation experience. Now, Abby, I know that you have had a heart for missions in the past and presently, I would assume. I'd be curious about that journey of missions, both maybe mission, from how was that part of how you were raised? And then from there, some of your different mission experiences. You've had several, mission experiences, and I'm just curious. And what I mean by mission experience is actually going to a foreign place or somewhere outside of your hometown. Mm-hmm. For us as Christians, we believe that mission is every day. But in this sense, more of a focused call to those maybe outside of the Canton area, per se. Yeah. And how did that shape? How did that form? What are some of your experiences with that? Just share maybe a little bit of that.
Yeah. One thing that definitely formed my desire to be involved in missions was the fact that our church has always supported missionaries. And they would often come and share during Sunday school or during the service, and they would show pictures. And I can distinctly remember, like, always getting very distracted during church. Like, my grandma had, like, a purse full of, like, toys, basically, just to keep us busy. But whenever there would be a missionary sharing, like, I gave full attention. It was so interesting to me. And I've always been a very avid reader, and just books that were set in other countries or, anyone from a different place. I mean, living in Canton, I didn't come into contact with a lot of people that had traveled extensively or were from other places. So I think at first it was more just like intrigue of like just traveling, and wasn't necessarily like missional, just like experiencing something new. And then as I got older, that desire kind of changed when I saw how many of these like abroad places had so much more need than we did here. I remember in the old church, it was a movie night, like a Friday night probably, and they showed at the end of the Spear, about Jim Elliot going to Ecuador, and he was martyred, and I remember crying and crying. I mean, it's an awesome movie. And I was probably like 13 around there. Yeah. And that's when I first felt like the first call for missions to help people, just seeing like he sacrificed so much. And then the impact, like the legacy that left of people believing for generations without him, like a whole tribe never would have got that chance to know Jesus. So I was like my first, like, I will go anywhere and like just do anything. And and then it was not long after that Kyle Martin was leading a trip to Honduras. So I was 14 then, and my parents let me go.
Wow.
And Todd Delp was like my guardian, Miriam and Kyle. And that trip is probably one of the most like important things that's ever happened in my life.
So how long was that trip?
That was only a week long.
1 week. So, okay. So you were like 14 years old going out without your parents, but you had some other parent type figures, I guess you could say, in that time.
Yes.
How did that affect apparently your parents were cool with that. So like, to some extent.
Yeah, my parents, so a lot of my friends' parents over the years have always been like, your parents must be crazy to let you go and like do these things. We wouldn't let our kids, or they would just, I don't know. It was a different experience. But one thing my parents have been very faithful in is just like taking time to pray about it and knowing that if that's God's will for me, then that's what I should do. Like, it takes, I mean, they probably were still very worried. They didn't show that to me, though. They were always very, and they are very supportive of me. But I think Bob Martin said this, I'll probably misquote him, but he would rather have his daughter go to India, you know, one of the more dangerous places in the world, in the will of God, than be here driving around Bradford County out of the will of God. Like, it's more safe for us to be where God wants us to be. And they have like really walked that out, because I've asked them for permission to do a lot of some crazy traveling things and missions and
I think that's cool that your parents can kind of like support you in that, and then like almost partner with you in some ways? Because haven't they actually gone on trips with you then as well?
Oh, yeah. So I talked about that first trip so much that they probably got sick of it and were like, okay, we're going to go and we're going to see what this is like. Like, this girl, she talks too much about it. So the following year, it was like almost exactly a year later, I went with my parents and my brother. And on that trip, did Mac Gleckner go, and like a few others from the church. So we like pulled a team together and we went back. And then my parents got to see like why I loved it so much. And it kind of became like a family mission experience. And then in a future trip, my sisters went, like the whole family was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's becoming a family affair at that point. Where it stemmed from you being like, hey, I want to go to this other country as a 14-year-old. And then, you got the whole family into it.
Yeah.
After a while.
Cool. Yes.
That's crazy. So one thing I just thought of is Spanish, yeah. Right? So like Honduras, they speak Spanish. And I'm sure they have their own dialect or whatever. And you were 14 when you first went. So, like, you would have been, like, what? What grade? That would be, like...
Well, I was...
I can't even remember.
My schooling was kind of
weird. Oh, your schooling was different. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was... So
did
I
you
was,
take Spanish then in high school?
I did.
I guess that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, I took... Well, I always knew. It was a dream of mine to speak Spanish. And it was something that I never thought I would do. Like, I distinctly, in Spanish class, being like, wow, I would love to be able to speak this language, but it's not going to happen for me because no one around here speaks a different language, so I'm not. And after the first trip, being pretty much unable to communicate other than I was a freshman or sophomore. I had very little Spanish under my belt, but being able to see, the doors that it would open if I could communicate better gave me more motivation in school. And I always tried in Spanish, but it was like that extra like really trying to learn phrases that would be useful. And then every trip that I went, like it kept building. And then I would come back, be in Spanish class, like even more interested. And the combination of those two things, I learned Spanish pretty fast.
So there you go, parents. Everyone who's struggling with homeschooling and stuff right now, like if you can't get your kids to learn Spanish, just send them to a foreign country.
Yes. Like, it will make them more interested, guaranteed. Or maybe it will just be like, oh no.
Oh my. Okay, yeah, because I mean, I've gone on a short-term mission trip down to Dominican Republic back in the day. You know, Bob Martin was part of that. And I remember trying to learn Spanish, like just packing in vocabulary before I went on the trip. Like, and here I knew like more than some of the other people who had taken Spanish just because I was just so like focused on like trying to learn what I could. I didn't know very much. Like, and I would joke around with the locals about my poor Spanish, but, and it was fun, but it was like, it's just one of those things. I've always had an interest in languages anyway, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, speaking Spanish has opened up many doors.
Sure.
Like in the area, we don't have a huge Spanish-speaking population by any means, but with the gas industry, like there are different people in the area. Mom's called me to the salon to translate for haircuts, which is always interesting.
Yeah.
And then I've met like some of the wives of the people that are working here. One time she invited me, she's getting her nails done at the salon. So I came to translate and made sure, you know, it's all good there.
Yeah.
And she's like, you should come to dinner at my house. I'm like, oh yeah, when? She's like, right now. Like I just made ceviche and she like lived just like a walking distance away. Awesome. So we just walked and like, I just met her like an hour prior. We had dinner and like I met her kids and her husband. We just talked. I think I was just shocked. I'm like, I'm here in Canton getting to communicate pretty well with, you know, a person that I just met. And this would have never happened.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It was very eye-opening, like what God can do with
that's what I was
little,
gonna say. Yeah.
Little
yeah.
things.
Like God has taken you on that journey. You learn something like, almost secondarily, like that you don't think will be applicable to your daily life necessarily, but maybe someday in the future, right? And then all of a sudden you're there, you're and God's like just giving you this gift of like here you go, like here's a situation, I'm gonna place you in this situation, you just have to walk in it and just use what I've already equipped you with, and it's so crazy to just see those connections and how you can. God leads us. Oh, that's so cool. I love stories like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's just it makes me laugh. Some of the situations I found myself in because someone will say like, oh yeah, I know, girl. She speaks some Spanish. Like, she can help you with this. Then I end up like meeting these very interesting people. And, no, it's just I translated for a lawyer once in Tawanda that I met through work.
Wow.
And it was like a divorce case, but he had me sit in and made sure everything was like that's communicated crazy. Well. And I'm just like, why? How does this happen?
That's interesting.
That's cool. So you've been on these mission trips. What's like one of your favorite? I know you probably don't have a favorite, but like some of the top favorite things that you've been able to do when you're in Honduras, say, or wherever you're at, and in that vein, like just a couple of examples, maybe.
Yeah. So for some of the trips, well, all the trips have like more of a different focus. So it depends on. Like, oh, do they need a cook? Do they need a teacher? Or if I'm just, like, going as part of a work team. But I love cooking a lot. So some of my favorite memories are when, like, the teams that are there actually out working and I just am in the house and, like, with the – we live and work with a family there. So I'm just, like, back with the ladies and we're just cooking and just learning from them or – like teaching them how to make cake or like cookies. I just love like American food, spaghetti, like just so many American dishes. So just like having conversation with them. Usually the kids are in school, so it's a little quieter, and just being with the ladies and
nice.
I just like the slower lifestyle or doing laundry and so that's probably my favorite. More active things. I did teach at one point, and I had moments that I liked, but I figured I'm not cut out to be an elementary school teacher. It was, like, good for the short term, but I got so stretched. That was interesting. Like, there were moments that I was like, if it could always be, like, this one class, like, this day, I would never stop. But then there are other classes that, like, make you crazy.
Yeah.
But I love working with kids in a less formal environment, like when we're concreting house. Usually there's enough, if there are enough men, then I kind of let them do the heavy work. And then we'll do, like, we'll braid hair, make bracelets, do, like, a Bible lesson in craft, that kind of thing. Just getting to know them, know their names. I love that. So I can still teach, but it's in a... Like, they don't have to be seated, and there's a lot more freedom than that.
Yeah.
So. That's cool. Yeah, cooking and kids, for sure. My favorite things to be involved in.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Abby, after high school, you had a plan, and then you had a different plan, and then a different plan. Like, God led you through some different things. Like, what was that journey like? What were some of those stepping stones along that way?
Yeah, since elementary school into high school, I really wanted to go to college. I felt that's what people kind of expected me to do, and I wanted to make my parents proud, make my teachers proud. So I thought I would do something in healthcare because that seemed, like, successful to me. And I knew I would make lots of money, like if I was a doctor or something. So that was my plan for a long time. And then probably like 2 years before graduating, I'm like, maybe not a doctor, maybe like physical therapist. But I was still always like, I wanted to do some career that involved schooling.
So this was, and you had already had some mission experiences in the midst of this. So that's important to remember too.
But. Yeah, I thought like, well, I could be a nurse or a doctor. And then once my schooling was paid for, like, I could use that in missions. Like, I wanted a career that would be useful overseas, but still I wanted it to be something that was like, yes, I achieved this. And I, it's just, I guess I did very well in high school, so teachers just thought, like, yeah, Abby's going to go to college for sure. And, like, I just kind of, like, went along with it. And so it was... My junior year of high school, I did a missions trip. Another one, I think that was with, like, most of my family was there. And I remember Bob asking me, like, would you want to come down next year? Like, longer. You're welcome. You know, you could cook, you could do this and that. I'm like, oh, it's my senior year, and I should, that's the year before college, so I should take a lot of hard classes and transition into college then. And I started really thinking about, like, what did I actually want to do? Like, was my desire to be a doctor or a nurse? And throughout the upcoming months, I thought about that a lot, and I realized, like, I don't even like needles. I don't like blood. Like, I don't like any of that. And I just had this realization. I was, like, trying to plan my life based on what people wanted me to do or what I thought was successful. And so my senior year, I homeschooled. Okay. I didn't go. The rest of my schooling was all done at Canton. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier. And I only needed one credit to graduate. So I just took English online and Spanish for extra learning. And I went to Honduras for a couple months out of my senior year. Like, I like crammed in the classes when I was home. And then when I was away, I didn't have to do that. Mm-hmm. So that at that point, I knew, like, I am not going to college. Yeah. And that was... A lot of people were very surprised by that, especially in the education system. Like, it was looked on as kind of being like a failure, like giving up at the very end. But that's something that I learned from, like, our definition as believers of success is so different than how the world would perceive it.
That's awesome.
At graduation, I had come home from Honduras the week before, and I got to walk with my class, and I had no idea at all. Like, after that, I'm like, I have no clue. And we did a youth group trip in the summer. It actually took us back to Honduras as it would
happen. And that was Keegan, right? Or was that you?
Well, God made that whole thing happen. I was along for the ride. We were there. Yeah, that was pretty, that was awesome. Had a good number of the youth group went down, and you guys were there. You saved us on the way back with your Spanish. I remember that. That was awesome.
So we ended up on that trip, like, really near to where I had been before. And so the trip that we were, or the group, the organization that was running this trip was VidaNet, which they have a discipleship program called Vida 220, which is similar in a way to Reach. I think it's modeled after Reach and YWAM. It's kind of like a combination.
Yeah, which those, for those who are listening, those are all short-term / mid-term programs that different mission agencies have for young adults, mostly. Yeah. To send them all over the world and get a mission experience in some ways. So,
yeah. So I had always been interested in Reach, but I just didn't have, like, peace about it, or I knew I was called to Central America at that time. And I really wanted to continue learning Spanish. Like, if I do Reach, I could be sent to who knows where, and, like, the odds are that I'd be in a Spanish-speaking country is slim. So I just knew that wasn't quite right. So this trip happened in July, roughly. And at that point, I heard about Vida 220, and that is a discipleship program based in Central America, in Costa Rica. And then they do outreaches in the different countries, but it's only in Central America. It's like, this is exactly what I was looking for. So I decided then that's what I would do, and I came home for like 2 or 3 months, and then I went back again. Mm-hmm. It was like a year or two of, like, being home for a month and then being away and coming home, and like a lot of transitions, and it was very interesting.
So you've had a lot of interesting experiences in Honduras, and just with all of that, you went with the youth group. So you've been back now, and a couple of things I know that I just know about you. is that you like to bake. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
So you mentioned that about in Honduras baking some. And then also that you worked at a local cafe, or one in Towanda.
Yes.
And what do you like about that? Is that fun? Do you still enjoy it, or is that going with that? I know with coronavirus, are they shut down now?
We are.
Oh, okay.
We are. Right. So it's called, the name of the business where I work is the Community Cup.
Yes. Which I've been there and I've eaten, and they have great lattes and great,
yes. Good. So it's right in downtown Towanda. And we call it the Cup. So if I say the Cup, that's the place where I work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have always liked that kind of place, like cafe, kind of different. But I didn't even drink coffee, like, as a young person. It didn't start until I was in Honduras. It was, like, kind of a rite of passage. Like, it's not optional in some cases. It's handed to you. And you're like, well, I guess I drink coffee now. It's great. So then when I came home, I was more interested in that for sure. And through different connections, I got a job at the Cup. And I started actually in the kitchen. Because that's the only position they had available. And I wanted to be a barista, which that's the person that makes the drinks and is more, you can interact with the people a lot more. So after I got home from Vita 220, that was kind of my landing place, was the Cup. And the motto, or like the idea behind the business, is creating community one cup of coffee at a time, basically. Nice. So it is owned by a church, and we're run by a board. So I don't have like a boss per se who's like trying to turn a profit, which totally changes the atmosphere because we just have to do enough business to like pay the bills, pay us, and then that's it. Yeah, like we're not trying to always, do crazy things to make money or like raising prices a lot. Like we can just kind of like function.
That's awesome. I love that kind of business model. Just being there first for the community, and by extension of a mission, really, to create an environment where you can share Jesus and share that kind of, it's just, I love that kind of thing.
It is super, super cool. It was started by a missionary. This was his vision. And now he is in China. We don't even know where. It definitely is very, it's a missional place. And so the staff, our manager, she's from the church that owns the business. But the environment there, like working with people that are like-minded, they are all older than me, all the other staff. And we have volunteers from the church that will come in and do our dishes, like ladies that are retired. Yeah. So coming back from a good long time of missions, a couple years on and off, it was the perfect place for me because the ladies invested in me. They took care of me, ministered to me, prayed for me. You know, if you're sick, they're there to give you a massage if you have a headache, like you name it. It's the best place to work. So after a couple of months in the kitchen, I got to move out to the front and be a barista, which I love. I did not love being in the kitchen, just like the prep work is kind of like tedious and the same thing every day. So now I'm out front as a barista and I get unlimited amounts of coffee, which is awesome. And it's just awesome to have my job be a place where I can make money, but also be in ministry. Like every day I get to talk with people and I'm allowed to stop and pray for them. Or like sometimes people are having bad days and they know that we're believers just from, or even the atmosphere. People comment a lot like, this place is so peaceful, or this is so, like, there's something different, and from the music we play to just like the way we try to interact with people, they notice it, and that's been awesome to be admission there, and then they're also very understanding because they're believers. Like, I've gone the past two summers away to Central America, and then they still let me work again when I come back.
So they're providing that flexibility, and I think that's so cool if, you know, the owners are there. Mission, or, you know, ultimately they're accountable to Jesus, I guess you could say. Yeah. And yet, and so, like, that extra nudge of encouraging you to, you know, minister to people is just so freeing, I'm sure, within that environment and that kind of thing. Because that can be a struggle. Different people with different jobs, trying to figure out exactly how to minister to people. And, you know, sometimes it's, and a lot of times it can be, it's not overtly, you know, and it's just the day in and day out consistency of your walk with God. But, and then sometimes you have these opportunities where you're in situations where you can really share openly. And, that's really cool, to see that. And so shout out to any employers, you know, please encourage people to, you know, walk out their faith within the workplace like that. I think that's important. So, coronavirus definitely has taken its toll there. But in the meantime, and I don't know how this works because I honestly haven't been keeping up with you and all of the stuff you do because I feel like you've done so much. But one of the things I've heard is an Emerge program, and I know about it, and I'm supposed to know about it because I'm, you know, part of the conference, which is, so it's through CMC, I believe, or is it through Rosedale, or both?
It's like the in between them.
Okay.
They're like working together.
So for those of you who don't know, CMC is our conference of churches that we're a part of. So we're a part of a larger, you know, like-minded as far as theological stuff goes. And then, and so we network with other churches, and the Emerge program is kind of this leadership program, I believe, that you're a part of. Can you just share a little bit about that?
What
that's about?
So the Emerge program, I first heard about it in a kind of odd way. Darren asked if I wanted to go to a retreat with, like, young adults out at, the RIC, the International Center. It's in Columbus, Ohio. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, that sounds great. And I had a friend out there who's like, you can go visit her. So I get there, and I had no idea, like, what it even was at all. And there was actually, like, 10 of us that we were not in the Emerge program. They called us, like, lead something. We were worried we had joined into something, like, unknowingly.
Oh,
like,
that's so funny.
We get these like name tags that say like Abby Martin lead participant or something, and I'm like, what? Like, should I have been reading the books? Or like, I had no clue. Yeah. And I didn't know. I only knew one person there. So in that, it was a long weekend. Uh-huh. I heard about what Emerge was, and I roomed with another girl who was doing the program. So basically what it is it's to develop leaders in the church of any age. And they do that by having you work in a relationship with a mentor, which is something that we don't do a lot anymore often. So you have a mentor and you meet with them biweekly, and then in the meantime, you're reading, a list of books that they have for you and writing responses that you then like discuss with the mentor, and you're doing service, and it should be like practical ministry, either in the church or in the community, or a combination. So they encourage about 5 hours a week of that, and then it's about 5 hours of reading. So it's like part time.
So it is pretty intensive then, to some extent. I mean, if you're actually dedicating allotted time to it in that sense,
that's
definitely intentional, I would say.
Yeah, it was something that I knew this year I would be home, and it's not the time for me to go to school or to be in a mission, like, overseas. So it's like, how can I prepare myself or, like, just keep growing? Because if I would do nothing, then I feel like I'd just, like, be stagnant. So it's something to just keep me like growing, and it's helped me to see a lot of like different roles in the church that I wouldn't have otherwise been exposed in. Like this actually paired nicely with being the Sunday school superintendent's assistant. I think that's my title. I don't even know.
Assistant superintendent or something like that.
Vice or who even knows.
Second in command of the committee for the
what
Sunday
school
program.
What does this mean? I go to council meetings at Jennifer Camp. And so that's like an example. Like I never would have gone to a church council meeting otherwise, probably.
So then you can see that how the I guess you could say, for lack of a better term, the practical application of like our structure here at North Street.
Yes, exactly. Or how like the committees, or now I think I'm on a ton of committees. That's just what happens when you're home and available. And so seeing how like the interworkings and how that's reported to the church council and how that relates with the elders and I don't know. I teach Sunday school. That's how I get some of my service hours in. Nice. And then I get to volunteer at the Pregnancy Care Center in Towanda, which worked nicely. So then I could like go right from work to there. Nice. It's put me in a position to do things I would not have done otherwise. And read books that I never ever would have chosen to read.
Yeah. Which can be a good thing and a hard thing, though, sometimes.
Yes. Mostly good. There have been a few of the books I'm like, oh, I will suggest that this is taken off. But they usually have good content. Sometimes it's just dry and long.
Oh, man. So where are you at now? Like, what do you have any idea as far as your future? What you're thinking about as far as, down the line? I know, like I said, coronavirus is pretty much derailing like so many people's plans and the uncertainty. But, just curious where you're thinking at least for now.
Yeah. So this kind of goes back to like how God has been directing me. I knew that it was time, like this year was kind of like my last year working at the Cup, which I love it there, but I just felt that like, okay, like your time here, it's coming to an end. So I was researching different things and I was considering going to college with something, maybe teaching, because that was something I'd seen that I enjoy. So far from medical, I'm so glad I didn't do that. So exploring something like that, and I applied to some different colleges and went through like mountains of paperwork and FAFSA and just all this stuff, getting transcripts. And I was planning on going to Lock Haven in the fall for teaching, and a lot of doors closed like all on the same weekend. Like this was a maybe 2 months ago, and it was just very clear to me that that was not what I was supposed to do. And I'm like, what? Like, it's like getting to be the time where you need to be like applied to places. And I was so sure, like it was just time to do something different. And before that all happened, actually, I had went with Esther out to Rosedale and I took her to the Emerge, retreat thing. And so we were at Rosedale. Esther was interested. She had never been there and she had decided that that's where she was going.
Oh, wow.
In the fall. Yeah, Esther was just like, just had some, she loves Columbus. I mean, like, she loves it. Through City Challenge, different things with the youth group and missions. So Esther decides she's going there. I'm like, well, that's great, but that's not where I'm supposed to go. But I wanted to, is the weird thing, but I knew, like, I had this other plan to go to, like, a traditional college. So when that just got completely closed, completely canceled. I was like, I love Rosedale, and that's kind of fitting. They will help me prepare for missions. And I wasn't like 100% sure on teaching. Like if that had been a clear, like, go get your teaching degree, I would still do that. But it was more of like, well, I don't know, this would make sense. So right now, I was accepted into Rosedale like last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I got Esther's permission I'm allowed to go there too. Like, if she wouldn't have wanted me to, I would have like let her go do her thing. Because there are lots of Bible schools. But yeah, we're going to be roomies.
Wow.
So we decided if we had different roommates, we would annoy them terribly, always going into the other one's room to like borrow stuff. Oh, yeah. And so
yeah,
we're going to give that a whirl. I think it'll be good.
As a side note, your dad went there, didn't he?
He did. He went for like one of those 6-week terms. Yeah. Yeah, dad went to Rosedale a long time ago.
I'm sure it was way different back then.
He was like, they built a new student center. Yeah, it's super nice. He was like, let me tell you, we did not have a building like that. It's like we were in bunks, like all these guys in like one big room. Oh, yeah.
Times have changed for sure.
When it was just a
Rosedale. Yeah.
You know, I was going through my mom's old stuff and, we found old records of the Rosedale Corral.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, here we go, Rosedale Corral. And, yeah, it's just things have definitely changed since then.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is my plan at present. I mean, who knows what will happen. But I have a lot of peace about it, and I'm very excited. When those things are paired together, then I'm pretty sure, like, okay, this is what God wants me to
That's
do.
That's cool.
I can be excited about things, but I can feel that like unsettledness.
Yes.
And sometimes I'm like, I know this is the right thing to do, but I don't necessarily want to do it. Sometimes those things I am supposed to do. But when it's like together, like it is my heart's desire and I have peace, it's like a double green light. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Nice. Let's move on to coronavirus. So what, you know, your life has been changed by coronavirus. I think all of ours has been changed in one form or another, whether we've gotten more busy or less busy or just different. Things are just different. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective right now? I mean, what have you gone through? Yeah, I'm just curious what your perspective at the moment is.
Yeah, I'm one of the fortunate people, I would say, that I don't have, like, big financial obligations right now. So I haven't been working. This is my third week without work. And, like, I'm okay with that. I've actually been loving it a lot. I know there are terrible things happening, and other people are being affected differently. But for me, this has been a blessing.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's good to hear because, so much of it is, like, bemoaning the fact that, you know, for me, it's, like, grieving the fact that, like, we haven't been getting together as a church and on a weekend. And it's like, ugh. And then just not seeing as many people and stuff. And so, like, I want to hear, like, good things, too. Yeah. Like, there's got to be some good things happening.
There are definitely good things happening. I feel like in people my age, some of my friends are doing like online college classes at home. But what I've heard from a lot of people is like, we can rest. Mm-hmm.
And so before you, because I did hear that did you read a book or did you listen to a podcast or something about rest or about rest?
Listened to a podcast. So people with iPhones or any kind of podcasting, I'll give it a shout out. It's called Fight, Hustle, and End Hurry. It might be like Fight, Hurry, End Hustle. Switch the H words. I'm not sure on that.
Okay.
But you can find that on any like podcasting thing. So I listened to that in January, February, before this all got started. And it is basically, there's 10 podcasts about 30 minutes long. And it's two guys talking about basically how important rest is in our lives. Like we cannot function at the level that we're trying to as Americans and just our pursuit of being busy, how we think that is like, something to be proud of in a way, like how busy we are. And they talk about like, it's detrimental to us. And I have had burnouts in the past. Anyone who's gone through like a big time of burnout knows what that's like. And life should not be that way. Like sprinting and sprinting until you collapse in exhaustion and then you get up and do it again. It's like, how can we live and move at a pace that like we can sustain healthfully?
More sustainable, more pacing, maybe more. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you see that with like a lot of people. A lot of people still say, oh, they ask how you're doing, you say, oh, I'm staying busy. Like, that's a good thing. Like, it's a, like, yeah, staying busy and as opposed to just being. So.
Yeah. It's true because I find that, like, so, and I've heard this other places, but, like, you know, what's the most common thing people say when you ask them how they're doing? It's a lot of times, well, I've been busy. Yeah. And I do the same thing. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, we are. A lot of us really are. And it's almost like if you're not busy, then something's wrong with you or something.
Yeah, totally.
And maybe like we're getting too much affirmation or security in just being busy.
Yeah, and it's a part of our culture.
Yeah.
In other countries, it is not.
So that's why you like to go to Honduras.
Yes. It's like, we don't like program a nap into our day here. It's frowned upon. You sneak out of the office at like 1:30 and you don't come back for an hour.
Yeah. Siestas, right?
Yeah, yes, we need more of them. Yeah. So basically, I was trying or asking God, like, God, I want to hear you. I want you to speak to me about this situation. Or like, I just was feeling like I wasn't hearing much from God. It was a lot of like me talking. And I realized it was because I wasn't making a space of like quiet, or I was filling my life with more things and more noise, which a lot of those things were good things. Things in the church, like being involved with a lot of different programs or committees and things. That's not bad, but I am learning how to not say yes to like every good thing. Mm-hmm. Like you have to look at, okay, God, I know this is good, but is this actually what you want me to do? Like, our time is a resource just like money. We make budgets for our money, but with our time, like, we overspend almost every day.
Oh, that's so good, yeah.
And you just can't do it. You can't. Like, we would never put ourselves into that much debt with money. But with time, like, we're sleep deprived. That's a type of debt. They're just all of that stuff has been coming together. And then now I'm like, I have no work. I have no church activities. I have no, like all of these things that I was obligated to do from saying yes compulsively, like for a long time, is just taken away and I'm left with nothing at all.
How did that make you feel? Did it make you feel anxious at all? 'Cause like that can be kind of like, it, you know, almost scary, I think, for some people. I mean, was that... Or did you just relish and just
I was overjoyed. Well, okay, I had several lists created because I am a lover of lists. Like, I'll make a list every day just so I can cross things off of it. Like, I like that feeling. So I had a... Like, as I was working, I was like, oh, if we close, and I wasn't sure if we would or not, these are all the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that first week, like, I just... It was awesome. Like cleaning out closets, cabinets, like just random decluttering. But also, like I had so much time to do like longer quiet time, to take a walk, to spend time with family. So like balance between productivity, but still like I want to rest. Like I'm going to sleep as much as I can, which I found out is not as much as I thought I would. But yeah, like 7.5 hours is my peak. Who knew? Because I have to get up early for work at the coffee shop, like 4:30, 5. So now it's like that's much different. Don't have to do that.
It's interesting. So do you have like so as you've learned this through that podcast, which was what? Tell me again. What was the? It was.
I wrote it down. Did you write it down somewhere? I wanted to make sure that I got it right.
And because I know there's been a recent book, and it was one of the guys, John Mark Comer. Is that?
Yes. Okay.
He wrote a book recently called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. I have not read it. I've heard good things, but I have not read it. So that's, he's one of the guys on that podcast. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. Okay. So he partners with another person whose name is escaping me, but the name of it is Fight, Hustle, and Hurry. So the one book, the John Mark. He writes the book of the ruthless elimination of
hurry.
Now the other person writes a book about, like, I think it's called To Hell with the Hustle is the name of his book. Okay. So they come together and it's like an extension of their books, like things that got cut from the book or things they wanted to go into depth and couldn't.
Okay.
So it's them having a dialogue about what that has looked like in their lives.
Nice.
And they, one of them is a pastor, the other is like a social media influencer, and what that's meant for their families because they have young children. And
That's interesting, because so rest, this whole concept of rest, you know, I've struggled with at different points. Take our family, you know, we have four boys and they're bundles of energy.
Yes.
Or even when they're tired, you know, they're bundles of energy.
Yeah.
Which is hard to deal with sometimes. And constant, you know, I have a place where I can come. I can come to my office here at the church building. I can work on different things. I can call people. I can do all kinds of things here. I feel bad for my wife sometimes, honestly, because she's constantly around the children. And sometimes I provide, you know, I'll watch the children for her, or the children will be able to go to grandma's or something like that. But, you know, it just never stops with her. And it's like they need her constantly. And it's like, if it's not, you know, pay attention to, you know, what I drew here. It's like, feed me, I'm hungry. Or, you know, discipline me, I'm getting in trouble. Or, there's always something. So, I mean, just from your perspective, like, I'm just asking. I don't know if you have any answers. Maybe you don't. But do you have any, like, advice, just simple advice for somebody who's always dealing with that constant barrage of having to do more when, like, it feels like you can't possibly not do more?
Right. Oh. they touch on that in the podcast.
Oh, good.
Because they have,
I'll
lives
have to listen to
with
it.
Children. I highly recommend this podcast. I've sent it to a lot of friends, and nice. They are all like, wow, this is just, it's awesome. It like blows your mind, some of the things they say. So they both have wives. So I would like to hear a podcast from them.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because they, I mean, they said basically the same thing. Like, you know, they have their jobs. They're going kind of, they get to kind of get out of the house. But a mother's job is like,
never done.
It's never done. That's exactly right. Yeah. Those cliche statements are true. They're never,
I mean, mothering has to be the most, like, the hardest job, if you want to even call it a job, but the hardest calling or something to that effect that one could ever have. And I'm just amazed at how it's just totally involved. And so, yeah, I was just curious if you know anything about that. But
they mentioned, like, kind of what you said, like, they'll watch the kids and get the wife out of the house, or even if it's a few hours, just it's important. But
okay.
I think it's something that there is a point when we cannot possibly do anymore, and that's when we have to just cry out because we can't do anymore. But sometimes Jesus can help extend our limitations a little
bit. He does. And I have found that to be true too. There are times when our human limitations seem like it's impossible, and you just ask for a miracle, and it's like somehow you pull through. Even if it's a struggle, somehow you get through it. And and maybe that's what some people are feeling right now with coronavirus.
Yeah.
It's like every single day, just trying to get through it. You know, there are people at home, you know, spouses who don't get along and trying to figure out how that's working. And, you know, again, people with children who are like, get me away from these kids. I have to be around them 100% now, you know, trying to homeschool. Or
mothers who were working and now they're not working, their home and their kids are home. And just, they probably thought, I thought this phase of life was over.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I found with rest, I keep coming back to, is kind of like, you know, we do this less now than ever before, and I feel like, or at least in my experience, so like when I was pretty young, we were still, like my family would still set aside time, like Sundays were like, you know, you just kind of, you have to do your chores, but you don't do anything extra. Like you're not going to go out and work the garden, you're not going to go out and, you know, do extra work. On Sunday. And as time has gone on, it seems like there's less of that dedicated time.
Yeah.
And I find that with rest, if I'm not like disciplined in my day-to-day life, so if I don't plan out my week and say, you know what, I'm going to really prepare, say on Thursday to take time off on Friday,
yeah.
Or I'm going to, you know, really try hard to take extra time on Saturday to prepare for Sunday. If I'm not intentional, man, there's no rest. Like it's hard to, and I've often found that it's almost like you have to program or you have to really be intentional about setting time aside. I don't know if you guys find that to be the case, but.
That's something, like Sabbath rest is one of the topics that they address in the podcast. And it's something that I started doing before this all happened. Now I feel like my whole week is almost like a Sabbath rest. But when I was still working, it was interesting like how that looked. Like it maybe meant that, traditionally it's like a Saturday night to a Sunday night, 24 hours, but you can do it like whenever, because for pastors, they're actually working on Sunday. One of the guys in the podcast would do Friday night to Saturday night or some combination. So you have to actually prepare for it. Like there are things that I would traditionally do on a Sunday because I work Monday to Friday, like running errands and laundry and just different things. But it looks like working a little harder Saturday and getting things finished so that I had 24 hours. And I also, they talk a lot about like technology and resting from that, like kind of doing a reset. So 24 hours without a phone, without TV or maybe a movie, but like limited media. How like that's so different. I still got the same amount of things done, but I was so much more rested at the end. Like instead of stretching out all of these tasks in the weekend, like just get it done. And then having that intentional focus time to like Sabbath rest. And it makes a difference. It really does.
So is fishing considered Sabbath rest or not? I don't know. Keegan, do you have any of your points on that?
For me, it is for sure. But it's, I like to get outside. And even if you don't catch anything, which is good because I'm not the best fisherman. But I like being out in the stream. It's like, I just... Every time I'm out there, Psalm 23 is going through, like, by the still waters.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just seeing God in creation. And there's days, like, Charity prays a lot of times for me to catch stuff because when I first started fishing, a whole year I didn't catch anything. So, which is fine. I was still happy to be outside, but she would pray. And then there's just, there's times where I, like, catch a boatload, and it's awesome. So, it's fun. And, I think just... setting aside regular work, and a lot of that comes down to trust. It's trusting that God's given you enough time. And like you said, you try to finish things, but sometimes even if you don't, like that's not an excuse to then let it roll into the next day. Like trust that God knew I wouldn't have enough time to get that done.
Right.
And so I'm going to trust him with this day, with taking this time.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And I think especially as Americans, it's hard because our identity is in what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so resting doesn't feel restful. It's not. It's like, who am I on this seventh day?
It's stressful for some people.
It's stressful because, and I've caught that. Like, well, what am I doing? Well, this guy's working. Like, maybe I should too. And like, I think it's really hard for us because our identity is in what we do. And so I think a lot of us have an opportunity, if we're not working, like to just be. And that's hard, and it can be stressful at times. Like, who am I being? And just learning to be God's children. And that's okay. Like, my kids, I don't expect them to help all the time and to do things all the time. I just love, like, yesterday I watched my son kick this ball around the patio for about an hour and 15 minutes. And I just love that. And they're like, God's that way. He loves just seeing you sometimes just enjoy his creation, like just being his children.
I think that, you know, our security, like, I have to admit, as a pastor, so, like, you know, without having the weekend services, it's hard because so much of my identity is wrapped up in being a pastor and around that Sunday service. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not all wrapped up in that, but a good sizable chunk, you better believe it.
Yeah.
And so struggling with that being taken away, that's a hard thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're doing our best to supplement with whatever we can,
yeah.
But at the same time, man, that it tests your insecurities a little bit.
Yeah.
It tests you a little bit. And, you know, am I doing enough? And those types of things, those questions that are always popping into our heads. And just learning to rest in Jesus and the fact that, you know what, he's in control. He's got this covered.
Mm-hmm.
I can lay my own identity down,
mm-hmm.
or whatever I think I have, you know, down, mm-hmm. and take that time. This week, there was a point where believe it or not, doing some garden work can be kind of restful.
Because
it's different the ordinary. This week, I found myself, because I was so saturated with media for, like, you know, with coronavirus going on and everything there for a little bit, that I found I was just, it was making me more anxious. It was doing different things. I noticed it was doing that. And so the other day I actually kept my phone in the house on the counter, and I think I told Corlissa something to the effect of, like, you know, we used to never have cell phones. Like, I remember when we just had the phone in the house, and if it rang and I was outside, they'd leave a message and we'd get back. And so, like, just being intentional just to take the phone out of my pocket, set it aside, you know, check it now and then, but I don't have to have it with me all the time.
Yeah.
Like, wow. And how, like, good that felt. I mean, at first you're like, you feel very insecure.
Yes.
But,
something's missing.
Yeah. But like, if you do that consistently, how nice that is.
It is.
And you realize, oh, you know, I don't always have to be, like, right on it with that kind of thing all the time.
Right.
But yet, you know, if it's important, people will leave a message, people will text, that, and, you know, and that's all fine.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be available, but also that our lives aren't just being totally controlled by technology.
Exactly.
And that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. All right, so I felt like that was a cool conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, Abby.
Yeah, so thanks, Abby.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is interesting times, interesting opportunities. I'm glad we could do this just to get to know you better and help other people get to know you better. And maybe, you know, you'll get more of that connection. Talking about missions, so Why Not You? Is that the missions that you kind of were with some?
Yes.
Okay, so Why Not You? And then that's with Bob Martin.
Yes.
And Kyle Martin and some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I'm just trying to think of some resources here that you can talk about. Vita 220 was one. You talked about Rosedale and the Emerge program.
Yes.
All of these things, you can look them up online, I'm thinking, most of them. And Facebook and that kind of thing. And then also this podcast, I might be able to put the link in the show notes or something like that.
For the
other podcast. So maybe if you get a chance, you can listen to that, because I kind of want to listen to that now.
Yeah.
Please do.
God is good. Like, we were here talking about, like, there's so many, like, hard things that have been going on with coronavirus. It's just refreshing for me, honestly, to hear some good things. You know, the silver linings, maybe you could say, or just the positive things that God is doing through all of this, in spite of all of this, you know.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, it's so that's kind of refreshing. I just affirm you in that, and I affirm your journey in this life. It's just, it's amazing. So I'm just, we've been blessed by your sharing.
I guess if anyone needs any baking, I'm going to throw this out there. I'm still in the merge, but it's hard to find service.
All right.
So if you hear of a need involving food in any way, or even like groceries, anything like that,
yeah.
I am available. My schedule is open for the foreseeable future until I go back to work. So
great.
Yeah, I'll throw that out there.
Nice. And can people get a hold of you on Facebook? Are you on Facebook?
I am.
Are you on? Okay.
I'm on Facebook on as Facebook? Abby Martin.
Okay.
Abby spelled A-B-I.
Okay. And yeah, so well, great. Well, that's awesome. Thank you for that. And I just want to close with another like prayer from a songbook. This is from the Methodist hymnal this time. And it's just for quietness of spirit. As we talk about rest and we talk about the tumultuous world we live in and everything else. So I'll close out with this prayer. O God, from whom all holy desires, all good counsels, and all just works do proceed, give unto your servants that peace which the world cannot give, that our hearts may be set to obey your commandments, and that by you we may pass our time in rest and quietness through the merits and works of Jesus Christ, our Savior. Amen. See you next time.